Hello and welcome to What's Brewing, Project Zion podcast series, where we ask the questions, what is mission and why does it matter? I'm your host, Blake Smith, and I'm here with a growing friend of mine, Wayne Ellis. We're sitting together at Bluff Springs Campgrounds in McDavid, Florida, which is where I grew up. So I'm kind of back home this week, and I'm just really glad to be able to sit down with Wayne and talk to him about what is happening at the East Bruton Congregation in Alabama. So welcome, Wayne.
Glad to be here.
Good. It's really, really good to have you. Wayne, we like to start off these episodes by letting our guests tell a little bit about themselves so we can get to know you better. Would you be willing to do that?
I would. I grew up in a rural community as a young man, and I belonged to, as a boy, a Baptist congregation there, and was baptized in that church when I was 12 years old. And those people nurtured me all through my life. And I met a wonderful young girl that, when we were 16 years old, and she happened to belong to the Community of Christ Church. And so she struggled with me for a number of years, and a congregation in Bruton, Alabama loved me into the fellowship. And I was shared the story of the old Gogi and Teach slides.
All right.
And made my decision to be baptized. And just a short period later, we had our children. We have a son and a daughter and three grandsons. And Betty and I began to work in the church. And I was called to the priesthood a short time after I was baptized. And served in the church as a priest for a number of years, and then I was called to the office of elder. And 2 weeks after I was called to the office of elder, I was elected to pastor of the Bruton Congregation Church. And what a shock that was.
A shock that you were asked, or a shock that you took the position.
I really didn't even hardly know what a pastor was. And so, but it was a wonderful journey. I served that church for 16 years in a row there. And along with a group of loving people, we grew that church to be over 100 people. And when we started, it was about 20. And so we grew that church, and you know, things just were really, really good with us. And all my wife was called to, Betty was called to the office of elder, and she served the church for 2 years after I did the time that I did. And along with the T2000 era, if that means anything to some of you that are listening, the church went into a program of planting new churches. And so they came to Betty and I. Many of you might know Bill Dodds. Bill was one of the leaders of that movement. And
Bill Dodds was one of my mentors.
Was he?
Yeah,
fine person.
Yes, he is.
And so Bill came to us along with the apostle and asked us to step away from the Bruton congregation and start a different ministry. And I'll have to tell you that we live in a community that's both Bruton and East Bruton, and there's probably 9,000 people that lives in both towns. So it's a small total. Yeah, total.
Okay.
So it's a small town, and what they wanted us to step aside and of the congregation. And bear in mind, Betty was raised in this church from the time she was a child. All of her family was there. And they had a beautiful facility. We had built a nice educational building, really a beautiful sanctuary there. And to be perfectly honest with you, when they asked us would we do it, we could not make our minds up to leave that place. And so they pursued us, you know, and so we prayed about it, and we made the decision to step away and started a group to start a group, and it was just Betty and I.
Wow.
We didn't have anybody. We didn't have a facility. We didn't have anything but our home. And we started the congregation or the group in our home, and a lot of days and a lot of nights, nobody came. And the Lord began to bless us, and we outgrew our home. And we left there and went to a place, rented place in Britain.
About how long of a time period was that from the time you started your home church to where you outgrew the home?
About 2 years.
Okay.
And we could not afford a really nice place, and we rented a building. I had three families, us and two other families. It gave $50 a week to pay the rent to the building, and the congregation paid the bills. We grew that group and that place to be over 100 people.
Wow.
And of every walk of life. And we was a place where all was well. You know, it wasn't uncommon to smell liquor on people's breath. It wasn't uncommon to somebody come to church, and one Sunday morning, man come to church, and I cooked breakfast for him before church. And that was the kind of congregation we were.
That is amazing.
And so
what a model.
We didn't have no sound system. We had a boom box. We took, I'll tell this little story, and I may be getting long, but we didn't have a podium for to preach from and share from. And I had two young teenage boys there that their mother was divorced, and they had a hard time, and we baptized the woman and her three children, and they became a vital part of our congregation. And so I told them boys one day, we need to build a podium for where we could stand behind it. And I said, I got an idea. It's a cardboard box in the trash behind the church. Let's make it out of that cardboard box. And me and them two boys took that box, and we glued it and formed it just like a podium, and to where it was, where we could stand behind it. They painted it with paint, and it was white. And it was so important to us, that cardboard box podium was, that them young boys picked that box up and put it in a room after we used it on Sunday to protect it.
Oh my goodness.
We used that podium for a number of years there, and that's what we preached behind. And so it was a shock from where we come, where the church was stained glass windows, carpet, you know, padded seats, you know, and just home to be, you know,
right,
to a situation like that. But it was the best thing that we've ever done.
Now, this group that you were forming, is that the formation of the East Bruton Congregation?
That's the formation of the East Bruton Congregation. And we began to look for us a building. And this was when the T2000 stepped in to help us. And we found a building in East Bruton that we still are in. We've been in that building almost 30 years. And we couldn't afford to build. It was more than we had. We had about 25 people that was able to give, but a lot more that came. But that was okay. About as many as we had that was able to give. And so we wanted the building, but we knew we couldn't afford it. And so we had some connections with some of the people of the church that we had known for years in Independence. And they got on board with us along with Bill. And we got the man down off the price of it a little bit. And they gave us $35,000. in a grant to buy the building.
The church did.
The church did. And so it put us on the map. The building has been suitable for us for 30 years. And it's a storefront building that had a drugstore in it. And we went in and redone everything in it, made classrooms in it, a kitchen, everything. And we began to have church there, and we are perfectly comfortable in that building today. And anybody that goes there is perfectly comfortable in that building. And we've had hundreds.
Do you think that building versus the Bruton congregation that was the padded seats and the stained glass windows, do you think that has had anything to do with the comfort
it
that
does
it's created?
Because off when we began to look to see where we felt like God was calling us, we had established in the rented building that we casually dressed. We didn't have a piano player. We played all praise music.
You had a cardboard podium.
Cardboard podium. The people was able to come to church in shorts, whatever they had to wear, that was long as it was presentable. And people that knew they couldn't put any money in the collection or knew they might not have gas money to get back home, knew they could come.
Wow.
And they did that. And we began to grow. We baptized 9 at one time here at Bluff Springs. And at one time, it was the biggest group we baptized. But we grew, and we have always been a church that the doors were open. And people might stay with us several years, and they may move out of town. Their lives might change. They might go back to where they came from in life, mm-hmm. but they're still a part of that church. And I get telephone calls. We get visits. We'll look up one Sunday, and one of them will walk in the door, you know, and it's like a homecoming in that place. And hundreds, literally hundreds of people have been through that church and found the Lord Jesus in their lives.
Wow.
You know, and we grew a lot to now that we have a big screen on one wall of our building that takes up the whole wall. We have a really nice sound system. You know, we got any kind of music you can play, and we play it. You know, there's no difference in the place in the room. Everybody's on the same level. When we preach, we among the people, you know,
so no stage.
There's no stage in the building. And if somebody wears a tie, they haven't been to church there before.
It's the first time.
Yeah, and that most of the time they'll take it off if they do come with a tie, you know. So
over those years, so many things are coming to mind. This is so exciting. Over the years, I know you said that you and Betty started it. It was just the two of you in the home church, and there were nights, days that nobody showed up. Over the years, how many established church members became part of that group at some point?
When we first started, we grew kind of fast, you know, and baptized quite a number of people. But we found that we were working with a group of people that was not real stable. You know, they were from place to place, you know.
Sure.
And so they weren't like permanent people, you know. They come and went, and we baptized a lot of those people. But we grew that church. Probably the most people that we had attending at one time was probably 50, you know, before the COVID came along, you know. And that really hurt us, you know.
Sure.
But anyway, we normally had 40 to 50 on Sunday. And our worship service includes everybody. You know, we Our people in our church do everything but serve the sacraments and preach. Other than that, all of the what takes place in the worship service is the congregation. And we had a young boy Sunday, about 4 or 5 years old, that took the offering up, and he was the meanest little boy you ever seen in your life. You couldn't keep him still, and he got that offering plate Sunday, and he went to running in that room and collecting all. He was the happiest little fella you'd ever see in your life. And, you know, so we won. We won with Pete, you know. And so that's kind of how our church has always been, you know. And
when I think about Doctrine and Covenants, and I think it, and listeners, somebody will probably correct me. I think it's like section 146 about being in the forefront. You guys have been in the forefront for a long time with this welcoming and inclusive ministry that just anybody off the street. I mean, a lot of our churches now are trying to do that, trying to come. And part of the reason why I asked you if there were established church members that came with you is because I think sometimes the more people who are steeped in tradition that are part of it, the more we're hesitant to try something new. And it sounds like you and Betty were just like, we're going to do this. I know Bill Dodds well enough to know that he was supporting that.
Yeah. So. And when we began, the agreement was, and to go back to the Bruton congregation, Betty and I had been there so long that the Bruton people that we had worked with for years, they kind of resented that we were leaving, you know, and I'd say this kindly, but they didn't support us leaving that congregation. They wanted us to stay there.
Sure.
And so anyway, the rule was between both groups that we could not interfere with any of the membership of the Bruton congregation. So we had three or four groups of husband and wife over the years that have left the Bruton congregation and come with us. And they're still with us. Okay. They saw the vision and had the desire to change. You know, Bruton was a very traditional church. And they were willing to do whatever it took to be able to give people a chance that was less fortunate, you know, than to be able to have a church home. And so we did have a few couples that did that with us, you know. And so, but the people that we brought on into the church, they caught the glimpse of what the church was about, you know, and just really became excited about spreading the gospel. Betty and I have not went out into the town hardly any through the years.
Has it just been words of mouth?
The words of mouth and the people that came would bring people back with them. And so that's how the churches grew.
That's a testimony of the ministry that you're bringing.
They brought the people, built the church that started coming to church.
Wonderful. Yeah. Now, you said you had about 50 before the pandemic, and the pandemic hurt you. What does the East Bruton congregation look like now?
We have, on a good Sunday, about 25. We have Sunday school. We have 11 o'clock. We don't have Sunday night services. And we have Wednesday night, and we do our service is never the same. There's somebody different in charge of the service, every service we have. Nobody permanently does anything there.
Okay.
And so we have 13 priesthood members in that congregation, it probably in a number of instances won't be a priesthood member that's is over the church or over the service.
Residing, okay.
Yeah, it will be somebody maybe just out of the congregation. It might not be a priesthood member that serves and does anything in that congregation, but preaches or serves the sacraments. And that everybody there takes part, even our kids. And we do on Sunday morning. It's a kind of an unusual situation. We had a young child that came to church one Sunday with her grandmother, and she came to one of the ladies in the church, and she said, "Do you have anything to eat? I'm hungry." And the girl went back, and she found some cookies or something that was in the church. And someone said, "Let's have a bowl of grits next Sunday." And you know, that's a Southern thing.
Yes, sir. I know that well. I know that well. I've enjoyed having them this week.
Yeah, and so for probably the last 15 years or more, we have had grits on Sunday morning for the kids and anybody that comes to church that wants grits. And that's served every Sunday morning. And we have kids that come from homes that would not have breakfast if they didn't eat the grits at church. And so that's become what we call the grit ministry. And those kids, they are able. I was told one time by one of our apostles that when I was doing some work with him, and he told me one time, he said, "You can't bring ministry to somebody that their stomach is growling."
That's right.
And that was Everett Graffio told me that. And so that's true. You know, and so anyway, we do that on Sunday morning. Our kids is involved in the 11 o'clock service. Wednesday night, we have an intergenerational church service. We may color pictures. We may have a Bible study. We may have where the kids, we do searching for scriptures. You know, we may make a little craft, but we mix all of that together with the adults and the kids, and everybody has something. Everybody is able to participate. And we do that every Wednesday night. We don't change it. It's exciting because you don't ever know what you're going to do when you go. You know, you don't never know what everybody's different. You know, and the same way on Sunday morning, we don't have a traditional service. You don't never know what you're going to sing. You don't never know what's going to happen in the service, who's going to pray, or any of that. All of that is coming from the congregation. And what is something wonderful that happened to us in the last number of months? We had a woman that showed up at church one Sunday. And she told me when I invited her into the building, she said, "I'm a Mormon." I said, "Well, that's great." And she said, "I have decided I want to find me another church." And she said, "I got up this morning and I prayed to God to show me a way and where he wanted me to be." And she said, "You may not believe this, but," she said, "when I got in front of this church, it was just like God turned my steering wheel and turned me into this parking lot." And she said, "When I opened the door, I knew I was where God wanted me to be." And this lady's still with us. We baptized her in the church.
That's a great story. Did she know about grit ministry before?
No, she did. But she gets her a bowl of grits every Sunday. We had another lady that showed up one Sunday morning, and she actually knew the other lady that came, but they had not talked. And she came in and she said, "I'm looking for me a church. I belong to the Mormons." I said, "You at the right place." And so she came in. This woman began to come to church with us. We baptized her in the church. Those two ladies are two of the hardest workers that we have in the church. And just a marvelous experience with them two girls. And and I'm gonna step out on the limb and say that both of those ladies say they have found the gospel. And it's where they know they're supposed to be.
Wow.
And so it was just a good experience for us, to do that, for that to happen to us, and so.
Well, it sounds like you guys are doing the right things, and just being there and being available, and your presence there is just bringing people in and they're finding you. God's leading them that way. That's great. You have some other ministries, I think, that you're doing. I'd be interested in having well, before you go into that, I guess I want to do a little side note and say to our listeners, if you haven't had grits, I want to say that you should give them a try. Don't just knock them off because it sounds bad. But also, the proper way to eat them, in case you didn't know, is with butter and salt. So they're not like oatmeal. We don't eat them with sweet, right? We don't eat them with syrup or whatever, brown sugar or whatever. So if you're going to try them, you got to try them right. But anyway,
And don't get tensed.
and don't get instant, right? That's exactly. That's like eating microwave popcorn.
I'll share a little bit of what about what we're doing now. And to share with you of how that we have done through the years. If we did something and we started a new ministry and it didn't work over a period of time, we quit doing it and we started something else. It just didn't fit, and so we weren't defeated. We just said, maybe we need to do something else and put our efforts in it, something, and see if we can't bring better ministry doing something else. And so we have a group of people that will just change overnight. They're committed. They're looking for ways for us to do different things for outreach. Just spontaneously, we had a man to say a few weeks ago when they had the day of prayer, and he said, let's set us up a table outside and us a tent. We got a tent. And he said, let's put up some signs up that we observe in the day of prayer and invite people to stop and we will have prayer with them.
Wow.
We put the tent up.
Did you?
Got outside. The first person that came to see us was a Baptist minister.
You're kidding.
And he said, now y'all don't beat him up too much because I was raised in the Baptist church.
Right?
And so anyway, he came and he said, listen, he said, my wife come by here. And he said, I gotta have surgery son Monday. And he said, my wife said, get what his name was now, said, you need to go over there at the Community of Christ Church. They got a sign outside that they will pray for you. And she said, God spoke to me and told me to tell you to go over there and let them folks pray for you. Well, he walks up and he shocked me because he said, I'm the Baptist minister in the church.
Wow.
He said, I said, oh my goodness. Maybe he's fixing to do something mean to us, just playing with that. But anyway, he said, I want y'all to pray for me. We got out in the front of that church and locked arms with that Baptist preacher and prayed for him in there. He left there a spirit-filled man, praising the Lord for the healing that he looked at happen in his life. And he was amazed and sober with it because the spirit was so strong in that it broke the barriers down. There was no religion there. It was God-loving people joining each other in prayer. And so that was a big thing. So we spontaneously do things like that. Don't take a lot of planning for it. We do a thing that we call GAP. It's grill and pray. is what GOUT stands for. We have a big charcoal grill, and we put charcoal and wood in there because it makes it smell good,
mm-hmm.
and it's attractive. And you see, we put it in the front of the church. We got signs up, free hamburgers and free hot dogs. And we got a table over there. We got a place people can put prayer concerns in. We'll have prayer with them if they ask. And so we cook hot dogs and hamburgers, and everything that we cook is free. And we have people coming over and over and over. And have we baptized anybody? No, but we called smoke in front of the church and people saw us, you know,
right.
And they know we're in the community, you know. And so we do that. We also do a Thanksgiving dinner every year. And the way we get the food to do this Thanksgiving dinner is we make a menu and we ask our people to bring 10 of whatever that we're going to have. And we do a traditional Thanksgiving meal with turkey. And the first year that we did it, we did 150 meals and we give out of food. And so we have steadily increased that. And so people can come get a plate. We'll have a church full of people sitting down eating. And so we do that every year and have a tremendous amount of fellowship. Our building sits in a parking lot where parades are brought together for Christmas and Thanksgiving and those kind of events. And the parade goes through both towns. But our church is in that parking lot.
Wow.
And so we got to noticing how many people that was there. So we decided, someone said, I bet those people have to go to the bathroom because they're there for hours.
While they wait, right?
While they wait.
Yeah.
And so one of the guys went out and he invited them to use the bathroom. Well, they came. So we decided we would have coffee, and it's cold when you
right.
do that,
sure.
Hot chocolate and cookies. We had over 100 people that come into church last year and celebrated with us. And it was amazing. People said, I want to give to this. So next year, y'all will be here. And so they donate money for us to be able to finance what we do. And so we have people there to greet them and to fellowship with them and everything. And it's been a marvelous thing just to ask somebody to use the bathroom.
Right.
You know, and it's opened up for us. Have we baptized anybody? No, we haven't, but they know we're there. They know the church is there and a part of the community. And so we do that. And we do a nursing home ministry. A few of our people do. And they do birthday parties for the people in the nursing home. They carry gifts and things like that. And so we do that ministry. Let's say I got this wrote down. Y'all will tell me to hush. Then, but let me see. We have a thing in the church that we call helping hands. And one of our men built us a box. It's got a little slot in it. And we encourage our people to give to that helping hands. Well, they gave me the responsibility to use that money to help people, with not having to keep up with who I give it to or how much I give. I have helped hundreds of people with the gifts of the congregation that goes into that helping hands, even our own people. I bought gas for people in our congregation to be able to come to church. I paid light bills for some of our people. It's widow women in our church to be able, their lights was going to be turned off. And we've been able to do that privately with individuals and be able to bring the ministry to people that are hurting. And we're right on the highway, and people from time to time will stop by there and need gas money to get somewhere. We always give, you know, to that thing. So we have that we do. And to share a little bit about how we get all of this done, if I could.
Absolutely.
We actually have what we call a mission and vision group in the church. And they're made up of three or four people that looks at our congregation and the needs in the community, and they drive other groups. We have an outreach group that does some of this, that you can join these groups. And the mission and vision gives them the challenge to reach out in these areas. They may be one of those groups that does a Thanksgiving dinner, and that they will have that responsibility. I personally am over the hospitality group. That's one of the groups we have. And we take care of all of the meals of the congregation. We do all of the funeral ministry, all of the hospital ministry, all of those things is done. We meet once a month. We send cards. We do text messages to people that we have the numbers of. And it's an invitational thing that we invite people to come. If somebody misses a Sunday, they get a text before the week's over. If someone comes in our church, they get a visitor's card. And if they put their telephone number down, they've messed up, because they're gonna get a call the next day. And that's the way we handle people that comes in our midst. But this mission and vision group drives the groups. They have a worship group, and they drive these individual groups, and we meet regularly. And these people that's in that mission and vision group, they are pretty strong that they encourage you to do what you're supposed to be doing, you know, and they keep us on track, you know. And we've found that our whole church is working in these groups. We have a finance group that takes over that. We have a group that takes care of our building, but they still are under this mission and vision, and they help to accountable to be about the work that's needed, you know. And that's how we keep everybody going and everybody busy, new ideas, you know, and all of that. And no, there's no telling how many different things we've done, you know, to bring ministry.
Well, if folks aren't encouraged hearing all of that, I mean, one of the things that's captured me about it is, first, the willingness to just kind of constantly evaluate, and if it doesn't work, don't be offended. Just move on and do something else. The other is to use resources that are already there. I mean, I hear congregations talk about, well, we don't have the money to do that. We don't have this, or we don't have that. And you're taking the resources that you have, like opening the bathrooms for the parade groups, you know, and that kind of thing, and just putting a table and a tent out on the prayer day. And doesn't take a lot of action, but it's so important to the community. And I just appreciate that. And I would imagine that would be encouraging to other congregations who feel like they don't have much.
Can I share a little something, if I have time, with the blessings that the Lord's poured out on us? When we first began, we had witnessed to a woman that had two boys and a girl. They were teenagers and a little less than teenagers. And she was a divorced lady, hard worker, and she was attracted to our church by a friend. Well, they began to come to church, and after a period of time, we baptized her and the kids. And she was a hard worker in the church. She brought probably more people to the church than anybody's ever brought to the group. Well, one day I tried to help her and around her house to do things that she didn't have the money to do. And I went over there one day, and one of the boys, I told him, I said, "I need to go to the bathroom." He said, "We don't have any water." And I said, "Uh-oh." He said, "But do you know how to flush a commode without water?" And I said, "No, I don't." So they had a bucket full of water in there, and they poured it in the commode.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the conditions in that home. And while I was there, their mom wasn't there. I noticed over in the corner a Christmas tree, just a little old small Christmas tree, and it had one thing of lights on it, and it was leaned up against the wall. And I stood there and looked at that, and I wept with our
wow.
kids.
Yeah.
The kids said, "Mr. Wayne, Mama said that she would get us a Christmas present when she got her income tax, that we weren't going to be able to have Christmas." I was hurt as deep as I've ever been hurt. And I walked out of that house weeping all the way home. And I called our group together that had started the group with us, and we had six couples that were financially able to support the church. And we were sitting at my table in my kitchen, and I said, "Folks, I have a problem." I said, "I visited Nita and the kids today to help her fix something. And those kids aren't going to have any Christmas." I said, "I can't stand that. I just don't. I'm hurt as deep as I ever been." And I said, "Could we just have $10? That we could give to each one of them so that they could have Christmas." And one of the boys that was there in the group, and at that time we just had a treasurer that had, we had a bank account, but we just had a checkbook. And one of the girls took care of the money. And he said, "Do you know how much money we got?" I said, "No." And I said, "Bobby, how much money we got?" She looked in her purse, got the checkbook out, and we had $275 in the checking account. He said, "I vote we give it all." That's all the money we had in the group. And we sat there. By the power of the Holy Spirit flooding our lives around that table. And one by one, it went around that table and said, I vote to give it all. We took that money, and Bobby carried those kids to Cameron, bought them some clothes and them a toy, and got their mother a gift. We left $5 in our bank account. And I can bear testimony to all of you that are listening. From that moment on, we have never been without money in our congregation. Never. We have always paid our bills. We borrowed $65,000 from the World Church to buy that building. We paid that building off in 13 years, and it was financed in 15 years. We've never not been able to pay our light bill. We've never not been able to have money to do whatever we did. But we gave it all, and we was willing to give everything that we had. And God's blessed us with that. And we're not rich, but we can do just about anything in our congregation that we want to do. We're redoing our church now from one end to the other, and we're almost finished. And we're going to do a health-approved kitchen, and we're going to be able to do meals out of that health-approved kitchen for the community that we live in. God has granted us the privilege to serve him because we was willing to give everything that we had, and he's blessed us because of that. We never worry about money. Never. Don't have to.
What an
incredible
testimony.
It's always enough.
That is an incredible testimony of sacrificial giving and the capacity of God's blessing for us. That oh my God, I've got chill bumps, Wayne. That thank you so much for sharing that testimony. And I hope that too will be encouraging to our listeners to remember when we are sacrificial in our giving, that God will take care of us and that God will bless us.
Yeah.
And what it just, I would imagine for those of you who are listening, and I can't remember if Wayne said at the beginning, but if it's not clear, he is 70 through and through, and getting 270s at the table. I could just go and hear these stories all day. I do want to ask you, Wayne, what are your hopes for the Bruton congregation going forward?
Well, I was touched this week with a sermon that you preached to us here at reunion. And I shared with you this morning that it was a scripture from the Doctrine and Covenants, 162. And it talks about us listening. And I was laid awake last night, and that's all that I could hear in my ears. And I hope for the East Bruton congregation that we will always be willing to listen to what God wants us to do and where he wants us to go. And I believe that if we do that, our church will continue to grow, as long as we listen to him. Not what we want to do, but what he wants us to do, and be a part of the community in whatever we can be there. We've had to earn our identity in the community that we live in. They would not let our boys at church play in the church softball league because we didn't believe in Jesus. And we had to suffer through things in our town like that. And I went to see the man that was over that league, and I knew him, and he told me, if you'll come back next year, you'll play softball. My boys didn't win a game, but at the end of the year, they gave a best sportsmanship award to one of the groups. Our boys won that sportsmanship award, and we got a standing ovation with the people that was in the park for how our boys had acted and everything. That's where God's cared us, you know, and I fully believe if we continue and in the community, we still have faith believers there in the community that we live in that are not for us. You know, they won't let us participate in the Thanksgiving service as far as any preaching or anything like that. But that's okay. That's okay. We're still going to earn our place in other ways.
If you had the Baptist minister come and ask for prayer, you're on the right path.
We're going to win. We're going to win.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I wanted to say, you mentioned the 70. I was ordained to the office of 70 in 1984, and I've been a 70 that long in the church. My wife's also 70, so both of us It's hard for 270 to live in the same house.
Hard to get a word in edgewise, probably, right?
Yeah. And so it's been a marvelous journey. Marvelous journey. You know.
That's great. And you shared your hopes for the Bruton congregation. Is it safe to say that probably your hopes for the community of Christ in general are similar?
Yeah, and it is. And you know, I'd like to say, as far as the church is concerned, the church has always been there for us. You know, they were willing to help us. You know, time to time we have people that calls us. If any of the church people's in the area, they come to see us. You know, they have been supportive the 30 years that we've been going as a congregation. You know, and so they have been nothing but good to us, you know, from the World Church. Steve Easy's been in our building and met with me and Betty in that congregation a number of years ago. He wanted to come by and visit with us. And so he sat in that building and he knows what's there.
Well, I just have one more question, and that is, what do you see as the most urgent needs for the church today as we try to move forward and be more inclusive and listen?
I have struggled in the last number of years with the condition that we've allowed ourselves to get in the church. With disagreements, misunderstandings, and the direction that the Lord has led us to go. And have had people that just vocally ridicule the church and just hard words and things. And I've been discouraged because of that, because I believe that God is in charge of what He would have us to do. I believe that we are the restored church on this earth, and we have a responsibility to spread that gospel to everybody that we have the opportunity to do that to. And I just fully believe that as long as we have our minds set on bickering and arguing and not being supportive and those kind of things, I don't believe we'll grow. I don't believe we'll be the church that we're supposed to be. We won't be the church that God established upon this earth and placed within it His gospel. We won't be able to carry that out. And so I just would see that one of the things that I'd like to see most of all is a change of heart and be willing to, maybe if you don't agree, but be supportive and move on in the church. And we've struggled in our area with some of the direction of the church with our people. We've lost people, you know, and I really believe that if we, those of us that have the chance, if we would buy, we would offer a positive testimony of what God has for us to do and what He's called us to do, I believe we'd have a different church, you know. And when I go preach somewhere, that's a message, you know. We are the church. I believe that. I joined this church because I believed it. And that's the gospel I preach, you know. And I feel like God will take care of everything else. If I'm preaching what He wants me to do, if I'm teaching what He wants me to do, if I'm serving in the office of 70 the way He wants me to do, and I keep my eyes focused on the Lord Jesus, He'll take care of everything else.
Amen, brother. Amen. Well, is there anything you'd like to talk about that I haven't asked?
No, because I'm sure these folks are tired of listening to that.
I don't know about that, but Wayne, I so deeply appreciate you being willing to sit down, and it's just exciting to hear when congregations are looking at the positive side and willing to open their hearts and their doors and welcome in a truly welcoming fashion. And it sounds like East Bruton is doing that. I hope that it will be an encouragement to all of our listeners. So thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure for me.
And thank you to all of our listeners here at Project Zion Podcast. You've been listening to an episode of What's Brewing. I'm Blake Smith. I've been your host, and I've been here with Wayne Ellis. We hope that going forward, if you'd like to hear more about What's Brewing around the church, you can find it on projectzionpodcast.org. And you can always find Project Zion Podcast on all of your favorite servers. So we invite you to come back and join us for more and share us with others as you have a chance. Have a great day.